This is music from Dan, for the sake of this program, Houdini Tepfer. Welcome to The Checkout. It's also a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe to it today. I'm Simon Rentner. The pianist Dan Tepfer locks himself inside of 11 cages, or should I say, 11 compositions, on his latest recording, 11 Cages. He says in each tune, there's a certain kind of restraint or rule, mostly in a formal sense, a law of the composition itself, like a specific rhythmic pattern or chord progression. But Tepfer applies this concept a bit more loosely, even metaphorically, such as being locked into a committed relationship. However, as the pianist discovers in our conversation together, there's a weird irony here. Often, these strict rules we impose on ourselves, we can sometimes feel a little more liberated. Plus, the pianist tells us exactly what it's like actually being locked up inside a cage. All of those stories and more are coming your way on this edition of The Checkout. Thanks for checking in. Dan Tepfer, join us here on The Checkout. So if you will humor me for a moment, I like to kind of imagine scenarios or be maybe a little presumptuous, but that's my job as a journalist,
right? Go ahead and presume,
right?
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's presume together.
I just envision you know, growing up in Paris in a very highly cultured, very educated environment. Well-mannered environment.
As I don't know if my parents would agree with that. Kind of, my parents are kind of weirdos. You know, they're from Oregon. They're like from a small town in Oregon, and at some point, they decided to try something else and managed to move to France. And they both found jobs there because it was the 70s, and it was a lot easier to find jobs and get residency back then. And I think of them as kind of they're like hippies without the hippie.
You know? Okay, so here you are, living in Paris, clearly probably playing the piano at an early age, getting into geekery, learning computer programming. You ended up getting your degree in astrophysics, so you clearly had a knack for science. You know, you were clearly demonstrating a certain level of skill in many areas. Is this where your mom expected you to end up?
Wow. I love this question. This is probably the most original question I've ever been asked in an interview, Simon. Bravo. I don't know. You'll have to interview my mom. But in some ways, though, you know, that is an interesting question because I am a little bit right. I'm kind of at the intersection of my parents, really, if you think about it. My mom is an opera singer, but grew up singing jazz standards with her father, who was a jazz pianist on the West Coast. My grandfather, and my father is a biologist. He's a scientist. His whole career is in research biology. So me, you know, yeah, my undergrad was in physics, and then my master's was in jazz piano. And I make, you know, my career has been as a musician, but I really care a lot about math and science and computers. So in some ways, yeah, maybe this is exactly where my mom would expect me to end up.
I can't imagine, Dan Tepfer, you've ever been locked up.
Okay. See, this brings up the question of what a cage is. And I think it's a really useful metaphor for any type of constraint. I mean, obviously there's something unpleasant about the idea of actually being in a physical cage. But you know what? I got arrested for something really stupid a few years ago.
You did?
Yeah, and I spent the night in jail. And I actually I just attended this Steve Coleman workshop. This was like maybe, I don't know, 7 years ago. The arrest actually came from biking around Prospect Park after closing time. So just so you know how stupid this was. I'm sitting there in jail overnight with like this homeless guy. And I just attended these Steve Coleman workshops. And, you know, I spent the whole night like tapping out this crazy rhythmic stuff on my knees in jail. And I'm sitting there thinking, huh, you know, if I weren't in jail right now, I don't think I'd be working so hard on this stuff. So I think there's, you know, I wouldn't want to say there's always something positive about constraints, because obviously, you know, if you're in the gulag or you're, you know, actually in prison for life, I'm sure there's probably nothing positive to be said about that. And those are terrible experiences. But I think the notion of constraints, especially if you know you can get out of them soon, can be very powerful and can focus you really deeply. So that's a little bit what I wanted to explore on this record, is coming up with compositional ideas and making them pretty constraining, and then seeing how successfully you can fight your way out of those constraints and really make music out of them. Because to me, the end goal always has to be that the music feels deeply felt, and there's a certain spirituality about it. You can't just be about hearing the constraints, you know. That's what's wonderful about Bach, or somebody like Monk, for example. I think of Monk that way totally as well. Somebody who wrote such specific compositions that are pretty constraining, and then in performance completely transcends those constraints.
So take us to a composition on this recording that may have the strictest parameters, the gulag on this recording.
the gulag of 11 cages. Maybe one of the most fun ones to explain is a piece called Hindi Hex. So a few years ago, I had a duo series in an art gallery on the Lower East Side, and I invited different guests each week. I had Miguel Zanon, I had Billy Hart.
The saxophonist, the drummer,
yeah,
respectively.
And I also had Gilad Hexelman, the guitarist. And for each one of the, like, for me, this duo series was just as much about playing with these people as it was about creating deadlines for myself to generate new material. So for Gilad, I did something where I took the letters of his last name, of Hexelman, and I just said, you know, A, the letter A corresponds to the note C, letter B corresponds to note C sharp, and so on. And so then I got a melody from Hexelman, which goes something like this. It goes, okay? That's Hexelman.
That's in trademark Hex.
I know. And you know, that's just math, right? Just like working out what those numbers correspond to musically. And what I realized when I checked out that melody is like, that's basically in the diminished scale, except for one note. And so then I created this whole composition. Oh, well, it's in the diminished scale, and also it's nine notes, which is exactly the number of notes that is used in Indian tihais, which are this specific rhythmic concept from northern India, where a very intricate rhythmic phrase is repeated three times and works out within a 4-4 structure. So this specific tihai goes, So basically, I took that rhythmic concept and used that melody that I generated from Gilad's last name, and then made some harmony that fits in the diminished scale, which again, his name ends up being pretty much in that diminished scale, and that's the piece.
Dan Teffer, Hindi Hex, from his recording 11 Cages on Sunnyside. Thomas Morgan bass, Nate Wood drums. What you do under such limits, borders, rules, you bring a ton of beauty and meaning, and it doesn't feel like I'm listening to math jazz.
Man, I really appreciate you saying that. I think a lot of my heroes are, that's what they do. Like their music is very deeply structured and supported by actually a lot of math, but that's not what you hear, you know? So Monk, for example, he was fond of using something called the all interval tetrachord. And this is like a very intricate harmonic, like a group of notes that has a specific sound. And it's not something I think you would come up with unless you were thinking in a pretty intellectual way.
Well, can you play an example? Actually, let's bring the microphone over. Dan Teffer, now that I've flattered you and you accept my praise, now you have to tell us how you got in jail.
Oh my God. Well, let's see. The first time I went to jail.
No. Really?
Yeah, no, it's true. This is actually, it gave me a lot of insight, I think, on our legal system. And, you know, I'm a very privileged person. I'm a white male. So I'm not, you know, like statistically speaking, this doesn't happen to people like me very often. And it was really interesting to see it from the inside. So basically, like, I forget, this is 7 or 8 years ago. I biked around Prospect Park, I biked through Prospect Park after what turns out to be closing time.
Yeah.
And a police person stopped me and gave me a ticket. And the ticket was actually a summons. So you're supposed to show up in court. Which I learned later, these things always get tossed out of court because nobody actually cares. But I couldn't make the hearing date because I was on tour. So I wrote a letter saying, can I have another date at some later time? And so I kind of forgot about it. I didn't exactly forget about it, but I thought, okay, I don't know. It's maybe the police person didn't turn it in. And then a few months later, I was getting in the subway at 34th Street with my bike. And I had an unlimited Metro card and I swiped it. And then I went through the gate, but I was really careless about the swiping. It turns out you're supposed to swipe and then turn the turnstile. But I didn't do that. I just swiped it. And then I went through the gate and there were some cops there and they said, well, you didn't swipe your card. I said, yes, I did actually. And I have an unlimited anyway. They said, well, we need to check that. And they checked my card. Turns out the swipe hadn't registered because I was a little careless about it. And they're like, okay, we need to see your ID. So I give them my ID. And then it turns out there's a warrant out for my arrest, which is hilarious. And so they handcuffed me in 34th Street Station. And then I, because it was like around 4 p.m., I think, when they arrested me, I ended up spending the night in jail because the judges, you know, get off work at a certain time. So I saw the judge early in the morning. And you know, the judge essentially apologized for my having to spend the night in jail for having biked through Prospect Park after closing time.
Let Dan Teffer be free.
Cage, let everybody be free.
Let everyone be free. Let's listen to Cage Free One, Dan Teffer, from his latest recording on Sunnyside. Cage Free One, Dan Teffer, Thomas Morgan, Nate Wood. I suppose maybe the only rule on this particular piece is there are no rules, right? It's just free improvisation. It's completely free.
That's right. So, you know, when you think of cages, I think it's important to consider the absence of cages. But also, I think as soon as you're entering into, like, say you and I start having a conversation and we have no idea what we're going to talk about, as soon as the first word comes out of your mouth or mine, we're establishing a context. And it'd be kind of weird if all of a sudden we went completely non sequitur out of that context. Although there are definitely situations where that would work. But then even that response of a non sequitur acknowledges the pre-existing context, right?
Even if, because you're ignoring it, you're choosing not to address it.
Exactly. It's like negative space, right? If you, to have negative space, you need positive space. So my point is that, like, regardless of what we do, regardless of how much freedom we are, we think we're taking, we're always restricting our freedom, because that is the essence of structure. You know, the most free thing in some ways is noise, and there's nothing interesting about noise. Noise is literally the absence of signal, the absence of anything interesting. So really, cages, constraints, that to me is almost synonymous with structure. And so even in a free piece like what we just heard, there is structure being built as we go along, and we're navigating that constantly.
Dan Teffer, the pianist, once upon a time astrophysicist, rock climber, sometimes New York Times book reviewer.
Are you mythologizing me, Simon?
No, I'm just speaking what you do, man. All right, let's take you down some more. We can do that. We can talk about the other time you were arrested. No, just...
Oh, boy.
So there is another time. Two times? No.
Yeah, two times, man.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, the second time is even more ridiculous than the first.
All right, well, quickly, what happened?
Okay, the second time I was taking a tango lesson in Queens because I like tango dancing sometimes. And I was kind of running a little bit late for a meeting in the city. Oh, it was a rehearsal actually in the city I had to get to. I got into the station and I needed to put money on my Metro card. And so I go to the machine, I put my Metro card in, I put a $10
Subway
bill
is
in.
Not kind to you.
Subway is unkind to me. I put a $10 bill into the machine and the machine just spits my card out, but without adding money to it. So I go to the booth, which is right across from the machine, and I explain what happened to the guy. And he's like, nothing I can do for you, man. And I'm like, come on, can you let me into the subway? He's like, no. I'm like, well, can I write to the MTA to complain? Or he's like, yeah, you can send them a letter. I'm like, well, do you have an envelope or something I can use? Like, no. Incredibly unhelpful. And right at that moment, the subway was coming. I could hear it because we're in an elevated subway. And I was late, you know, and I didn't have another way to refill my card. So kind of to spite him, I just jumped the turnstile.
You do have a rebellious streak in you.
And of course, right around the corner from the turnstile was a cop. And the cop was absolutely convinced that I had jumped the turnstile, that I knew that he was there. He's like, he was just furious. He couldn't imagine that I didn't know he was there. And he's really furious. And so I managed to calm him down pretty quickly. And then he was like, okay, man, all right. I know you didn't do it on purpose. I understand your story, but I'm still going to have to check your ID. So he checks my ID. Now, something I'd never heard about, turns out if you've ever been arrested in the subway system, if you've ever been arrested in the subway system, if you get stopped again, for anything, like it could be, having your bag on the seat next to you. It could be like putting your feet on the seat. I mean, it could be anything, like moving between cars on a subway. If you ever get stopped by a cop again, they immediately just haul you to jail. At that point, you're considered a subway recidivist. That's what they call you, subway recidivist. So basically, the guy was like, the cop was really apologetic. He's like, man, this is your bad day. I'm really sorry, but I had to take you to jail.
You're like, what?
I'm like, no, man, come on. Give me the $75 fine. But yeah, so that I spent the night in jail again. What was funny about that time is that I happened to be reading this great Nabokov book that's called Invitation to a Beheading. I don't know if you know that book, but it's great. It's basically this man who's in an absurdist land. It's very like Kafka-esque. He's just an absurd land, and he is scheduled to be beheaded, but he doesn't know when it's going to happen. And he's constantly waiting, and he's all struggling with he has these ambitions of writing a great novel, and he's all struggling about whether he should start it or whether that's useless since he's about to be beheaded. But then he doesn't know when it's going to happen. And I managed to convince the cop to let me keep the book in the cell. So here I am. This time, this was out in Queens, so it wasn't just like the first time when I was just with one other person in the cell. I was in this big-ass cell with like maybe 17 other people. And there I am in the cell all night long reading Invitation to a Beheading by Vladimir Nabokov. And, it was kind of perfect.
Dan Teffer. That's so now we get to the true meaning of why he called his record 11 Cages. We've yeah, just heard
a little
two
bit
of them.
Experience with cages.
He joins us on the checkout, and this has been a joy talking with him. Absolutely hilarious. My God, a new side of Dan Teffer that no one knows, I'm assuming.
It's true. I haven't talked about this very much. But, you know, I hadn't even thought about how relevant that is to this record until you just brought it up. Yeah, it is totally relevant. Maybe yeah. That's why I called it 11 Cages. Maybe that's where my whole interest in the concept of cages came from.
Well, I did have a question, though, related to that, because as an artist and always putting yourself ready to be scrutinized, and you're an improviser, you're exposed, your mentor, Lee Konitz, likes to show up to gigs unprepared so he feels most alive and in the moment. That comes with a certain amount of psychological baggage, I can only imagine.
Well, you know what Lee likes to say? He likes to say that you have to be prepared to be unprepared. You know, so, I mean, if you're going to play tennis, that's very improvisational, right? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen, but if you haven't been working on your forehand and, you know, aren't in good physical shape, it's going to be really rough. So I think for Lee, it's like how good can you get at improvisation so that you can show up in any context and be so fluent that you can make it work, you know?
What about like doubt, you know, doubting yourself as an artist and or whether you have anything to say in the first place, because that could just be a cage, right? As
totally.
As an artist.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I don't think any artist worth his or her salt doesn't struggle with that. I think self-doubt and vulnerability, I think, is the essence of actually being an artist in many ways. But, you know, there's this quote from Ai Weiwei, the Chinese artist that I really like, where he says, if to express oneself, one needs a reason, then let me say that to express oneself is the reason. And I just love that. You know, ultimately, we are here to express ourselves. And I think everyone has something to say. And I think what makes the kind of art that I make, you know, jazz or, you know, instrumental music, I think what maybe can just distinguish it a little bit is that in order to express yourself, in order to be able to express yourself, there's a huge amount of language and kind of ability that you need to develop. And so I don't even need to ask myself, do I have something to say? Not really. I mean, it's like there's always something to say if you're living life. The more interesting question for me is how are you saying it?
Thank you.
We just heard 547 from Dan Teffer, his trio recording featuring Thomas Morgan on bass, also a math geek, I understand.
Definitely. Actually, Thomas and I when we were rehearsing for this record, we had one hang where we compared two programs we'd each written. It turns out independently we'd each written computer programs that do like 17th century counterpoint. So yeah, it was interesting because we'd both taken really different approaches to doing this, but actually the results were pretty similar.
All right, so hit us up with some 17th century counterpoint that you really vibe with.
Okay, well, I've done this actually quite a bit. I have this computer program that I wrote that'll just generate contrapuntal lines, right? And so actually I had this, I've done this a few times. I've had gigs with people and we're hanging out before the gig and we'll just start singing these things. And they sound great because they're following all the rules of counterpoint. And if you're following the rules, this is also a good illustration of what I was just talking about, right? Even a computer with absolutely no spirituality whatsoever and no real intention or anything, you know,
no
artistic.
No reason.
Yeah. If it just follows the rules of counterpoint, it can create some music that sounds pretty damn good. So, you know, you just do things well. And then if on top of that, you're human and you actually have something to express, then you're in business.
Well, let's listen to some of this from your program, just so, you know, we understand how geeky you are.
Yeah.
Renaissance period, classical,
like,
on?
Yeah, early Baroque.
He joins us here on the checkout, and you know, he just doesn't only play early music, y'all. He does cover a Beyonce tune on here. Why don't we listen to that real quick?
Oh yeah, Single Ladies. Yeah, I talk in the liner notes about how love can be its own cage.
There you go.
I mean,
how many times have you felt locked up by a woman?
Oh man, don't get me started. But you know, you engage in a relationship. The relationship has certain parameters that you can choose or not. That's a system of constraints that can be a really positive thing, and it can define. It can make you more free inside that. It's all about how you negotiate those cages. And that's what Beyonce is talking about in the song, I think.
Single Ladies, Beyonce, rendered by Dan Teffer on 11 Cages. We thank him so much for spending some time with us and talking about all of his cages that he dwells in.
And that I escape from.
The great escape artist that is Dan Teffer.
Dan Houdini Teffer.
And definitely make sure to check out Dan Teffer's performance at the Jazz Gallery, May 24th and 25th, celebrating 11 Cages or Barraquette on bass, replacing Thomas Morgan, and Nate Wood on drums. If you like the checkout and you like the podcast, please give us a review on iTunes. 5 stars are preferable, especially if you like the conversation. We also have a Facebook and Twitter following. Our handle on Twitter is @checkoutjazz. I'm @SimonRettner. And like us on our Facebook page, The Checkout from WBGO, which is a production of WBGO Newark. A special thanks to our production intern, Jasmine Murray. I'm Simon Rentner. Thanks for checking us out.